Welcome to Narratives in Between, a podcast where we traverse the diverse landscape of Central Eastern Europe and Southeastern Africa through the lens of our anthology titled Narratives of Closeness and Distance from Central Eastern Europe and Southeastern Africa, a Multicontextual Patchwork. The title is a bit long, but we felt that it was important as we were working on developing this project that we must have a title that encompasses the meaning of the work that we're doing as a corporation in the Defining Africa and Europe project. Welcome to another episode, and my name is Samba Yonga. This is a podcast that highlights the voices featured in the cross-continental anthology that hopes to develop a more comprehensive understanding of connections and distances in experiences, thinking, telling, and feeling of distant and closer worlds, whose places and spaces reveal their artistic, scientific, and literary potential. We're looking for unique narratives that deorient, decolonize, and bring knowledge and practice closer. In each episode, we unearth the stories that challenge perceptions, break down barriers, and foster a deeper understanding of the connections and distances that shape our world. Join us as we embark on a journey of exploration and discovery. Our first segment brings you an excerpt from the anthology. And what we're going to do is introduce our guest very shortly, and we're being joined by one of the four African authors who contributed to the anthology. She's Zambian, and she'll tell us a little bit about her work and also why she decided to be part of the anthology or apply for it. Dr. Mwaka Siluonde will offer us a glimpse into her unique narrative of In Between. Welcome, Doc. Or should I say Mwaka?
Thank you so much, Samba. Mwaka is fine. I'm very excited to be here.
We're excited to have you here. So tell us a little bit about your process and how you decided to submit your expression to be part of the anthology.
Okay. So first of all, I'll probably let you know that I'm a researcher. I teach literature and media to university students. Both my research and creative writing, I focus on decolonization. But the stance that I take is what motivated me to actually participate in this anthology, because I take the position of neither here nor there. You know, these pores that we've built for ourselves, like there's a pore that is indigenization, then there's another one that is westernization. So we have placed culture in these pores, these very fixed, set in concrete positions. So when I saw the ad for this collaboration, what struck me is, you know, like narratives in between, and also the paradox of close yet distant, because I look at culture as something that is in the in-between. We are alternating between close and distant from each other with regards to culture. The, you know, like almost but not quite there, almost but not quite there, swinging like a pendulum, but with all these voices emerging. So that motivated me to write my story, Spiritually Yoked. Yeah, so that's the motivation, basically. So the character is somehow in the in-between. Internally, she's moving from one extreme part of the country to another, and then interacting with different cultures internally, and also some that are coming from outside Zambia. So it's set in Zambia, in the Copper Belt. Yeah, so I grapple with these issues of being distant yet close in public spaces like an airport, particularly.
Yeah, I really like that about your story and how you managed to craft that interplay in such a delicate manner and not making it obvious. You just drew us into this world where we don't even notice the obvious ways we interact with each other and how we create distances, but at the same time, how we can also be drawn, closer together. I really like that. But, you know, I'm so interested in your research, but I'll let you do your excerpt in a couple of minutes, but not a lot of people are studying decolonization or decoloniality and indigenization. What made you make that choice?
I think for me, it's, you know, growing up with so many interactions, I went to a primary school where I interacted with people from different races and also people from different places. So when there's this, I call it a performance of ethnicity, where people have to keep on reminding you that this is you, this is your identity. Yet in the midst of it, you're interacting with so many people and picking up so many things. Then you end up realizing that culture is actually very fluid. It's not so fixed. So this is one reason that drove me in that direction, like specifically to just look at decolonization and just culture in the arts, particularly as something that's more fluid than we would want to think of it.
And it's so interesting because we come from a history where our identity has more or less been split, in that a part of it was indoctrinated into us. If you think of how religion, education was used as a way of indoctrinating and crafting identity for most colonized communities. And then there's also this other part of us, that where we interact in our own community and we're creating an identity through that. So it's almost like we live this kind of dichotomy and duality, which in as we grow up or as we interact in different spaces, we find that it clashes. But we insist, even as we interact in our everyday or as we present in our everyday, that we're one or the other. And I'm also always interested in the idea of, why does it have to be one or the other? Why can't they both exist in the same place? Because as much as I am, you know, I am my culture, I am my location, my geography, I'm also my everyday life experiences, which comes about through education, which comes about through interacting with people, travel, learning, and all of that. So I really liked how you played around with that. But before I go on, I can let you read your excerpt, because that's what we want to decipher and dissect. But tell us a little bit about the process of writing the story and what part you will be reading to us.
Okay, so this is a story that's born out of like partly my growing up on the Copper Belt, but also like some archival work that I was doing for some project a few years back on the Copper Belt. So the archival work introduced me to parts of my growing up that I did not like, a perspective that I did not have at the time, obviously, because you know, the way growing up is like you have a limited picture, a limited worldview, like it's limited to like what you're in contact with. Yeah. So then I decided to create this character, Malenga. So she moves from the northern part of Zambia to the Copper Belt to join her husband, because then it was common for like a man to go to work on the Copper Belt in the mines. Then, through some arranged marriage, a young girl would then have to move from the village or the rural Zambia to join her husband on the mines. But what we notice about this girl is there is a disconnect between her husband and herself, because the husband is much, much older. Eventually, like the husband ends up dying in a mining accident. Yeah, so that is something that is informed by the 1941 mine accident in Mufulira. Yeah, so she's growing up in Ron Township, and my mom grew up in Ron Township. So there's all this man is a drunkard. So there's a way that they drown there, you know, just being underground. There's that, what do we call it? The fear of like closed up spaces. Yeah, so then a lot of them drink to drown there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? Is that what happened? So you have all this research. That's so fascinating. I'd love to read it. Is it in your thesis?
No, it's not in my thesis. I was doing my PhD at that time. Yeah, so there's this local brew, you know, like the Shebeen kind of arrangement we see in the South African mine compound. So it's essentially that. Yeah, so there's this brew that they drink. It's they call it 7 days because it has to like brew for 7 days. So there are all these like social activities that take place in the mines. There are these prostitutes that like sell their merchandise on credit. Then at the month end, they go to the wives of miners. Like, so that all these finally little habits that I was able to tie together. But then after her husband dies, she ends up joining the convent because throughout her marriage, she's been wishing her husband dead. So as an act of penance, she joins the convent because she feels guilty about his death, because metaphorically it's like she had killed him, she had murdered him. Yeah. The part I'm going to read is Sister Mulenga Ye's letter at the airport. So it's at the airport that I'm using as a public space where different people from different nationalities, the plane is delayed, so they're waiting. It's in a lounge at the airport, so they are waiting to board their plane that has been delayed. So the part that I'm going to read is her just thinking about how hot it is and how she wishes she could get out of her habit because she's a nun. So yes, she's imagining the reactions of the people there. Then I'll also read you a part where she's interacting. The young Ahar is interacting with a Polish pub owner on the Copper Belt. Yeah.
Nice.
So this is a Polish couple that owns the pub. They found themselves on the Copper Belt because they were part of the Polish refugees during the Second World War. Yeah. So there's that. Yeah. So I'll be reading you two parts. At the airport and at the pub.
Thank you. Go for it.
Okay, let me go ahead. Okay, so we're at the airport and Mulenga is just thinking about taking off her habit. So she says, the menopausal hot flashes will come upon you without warning, the gynecologist had warned. I try to move my legs apart to allow some air in. I can feel the stickiness between my thighs and armpits where the fabric is wet with trapped sweat. It brushes against my skin. I catch myself smiling as I imagine how the faces around me would react if I dared to open my buttons. I'm almost laughing out loud now, because I think that the white lady with the green eyes would be most horrified. I had seen how she had looked at the girl with the protruding breasts. The black lady to my left, with carefully laid makeup, long lashes, and Gucci sunglasses, would most certainly urge me on. She has a life begins at 40 vibe about her. I look away when she raises her head slightly to read her face of some of the 20-inch Brazilian hair that has strayed. The teenager across the room would probably not notice. At 16 or 17 years old, she is too lost in the music coming from the bright pink earphones on her head, her knee-high boots tapping off to what I assume is the music. And perhaps the man who sits with a notepad jotting down things is a journalist, and tomorrow's headline will read, Bad Habits, Habitless Nun Spotted in Departure Lounge. Okay, so that's one part. Then I'll read you my last part.
I like that. That was so funny.
Here we're at the pub now. So okay. She's narrating. So she says, I stood at Odd Theo's pub opposite ZCBC to deliver the jerseys. Apparently, the Muzungu couple owned the place. Rumor had it that they came to Luansha from a refugee camp near Bonamkubwa in Kitwe. But I knew that must be a lie because Muzungus are the rulers, never the slaves. I had also heard some people call them Polishi. To us, every Muzungu was a Muzungu. The wife had become interested in my work after she saw a jersey I had made for my friend Nayame, who is a waitress at the pub. Inside, Mrs. Anna Lewitz smiled heartily when we walked into the dimly lit room. I was relieved, but only for a short while. Her eyes turned sad suddenly, cool like glass, staring beyond my own. I shifted my weight from one leg to another. I even turned to pull out a pink jersey, but she would not stop. I looked around the room. There were odd photographs, almost paintings of people from a very long time ago. A lot of lace hung off the tables and she had cakes with jam in the middle. Candles burnt in the daytime. Please forgive me for staring at you like this, but I see a big, big potential when I look at you. A very big star. But the first part of your life is not easy. You have to prepare your heart. Of course, life was not easy. If you could make a wish and you knew it would come true, would you? She asked, still staring at me with those gray eyes. Okay, so I will end there.
That is incredible. Thank you so much for sharing that. And like every time I read this story, and I think a lot of the times we take for granted the way our mind is conditioned, you know, and you were able to kind of give a vocabulary to the thoughts that sometimes go on in our mind. I'll give the example of you describing the perception of a Muzungu, like, you know, what are you talking about? Like, I can't even imagine a Muzungu being a beggar on the street. And I think those are some of the important narratives that need to, like, the stories that we need to tell that we don't normally see in our literature. And I really love that you took that direction.
Yeah, you're very right, Samba. Because when we think of Muzungu, actually, Namwali Serpo in her 2019 Odd Rift says, like, she gives a meaning to that, like in Nyanja, like Muzungu, Kuzunguluka, like to move around aimlessly, a name that was given to, you know, the early adventurers, explorers like David Livingstone. Yeah, to a name was given to how they would move about discovering this and that. Yeah, but then most importantly, it's how the colonial narrative, which we take as the official narrative, overshadows all these hidden narratives. So we think the Muzungu is the ruler. The Muzungu cannot be a slave. So it's interesting how Mulenga sees that. And it's juxtaposed with how the interesting thing is these Muzungus found themselves in Zambia because they were refugees. So it's so interesting. Yes, the paradox between what she thinks and the actual narrative.
Exactly. And I think even in our contemporary, what I like about this story is because you can even compare it, you know, talking about narratives of in between Europe and Africa. It speaks to the larger narrative of this whole topic of migration. It's huge now in the world in 2024, and it has mm-hmm. been for some years. Mm-hmm. And how migrants and immigrants are mistreated and ostracized and vilified. Mm-hmm. And yet we are a world of migrants. Everyone, if you look not even that far off into the past, everyone has migrated from somewhere, you know, and has now settled into the place they call home. And yet it's interesting to see the different perspectives of what we perceive and define as somebody who is a migrant who doesn't belong, and somebody who's a migrant and seems to have a right to be in a place, right? And it's all about perception. That's all it is, because they are essentially the same kind of people. They're the same migrants. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, even when it came to like just the narratives of in between and just the closeness and the distance, you notice that, like, just from my title, the issue of it being like spiritually yoked, it's like it's a spiritual, it's almost a it carries a cosmic kind of connection that we have, because if you look at the public space like an airport, there's that universal reaction. Like Mulenga actually anticipates that if she took off her clothes, she's a nun, she's in a habit. If she took off her clothes, everyone would react in some way. So you see, these are different nationalities, yet we have this universal cord that links all of us, almost a collective conscious. Like we react to the same things in the same way, basically. Yeah, so for me, it's that. Even in these online spaces, the virtual spaces, how we think we're very distant, but I'm sure you've noticed some, but like even on different social media platforms, how you realize that we're more alike. Yeah. So it's in all these places where we're actually carrying, I call it I call it cultural capital. Like you're moving and there's exchange of this cultural capital. I go to South Africa, the same Shima, Zimbabwe, it's Sata, South Africa, it's Pap. I'm calling it in Shima. The Malawian is calling it in Sima. So there's all this closeness, yeah, and at the same time there's a certain distance. So I think basically that's what excited me about this story, and yeah, because it fits into the broader research and my creative writing agenda.
I love that. I actually love that quite a lot. And I think it really encapsulates the vision and kind of like the objective that we had of exploring, you know, because we are working on this project at a very technical level. Obviously, you know, it's about working with steering groups, working with partners across Europe and Africa, mm-hmm. coming up with projects, executing the projects. But it was nice to bring in a narrative and literary perspective, because then it humanizes everything. It gives it a human face rather than just ticking boxes and trying to influence policies. So thank you so much for having gifted us with that gem of that gem of a story. I wonder, as one of the final comments that I'm going to make, did you have a chance to read any of the other stories, and what did you think of them?
You know what? Like, I haven't taken time to just sit down and read, but I've just been like skimming through. Mm-hmm. And I actually look forward. I have seen like work that's more scientific, other work is more poetic. So maybe I can speak from the skimming that I have done, that for me, it's how we created like a mosaic of different perspectives. Like you are saying, oftentimes there's no balance. You find that these conversations are being held in more technical spaces. Because I often see this between my technical and my creative side. Like, technical is like, it's technical. But then the creative side allows me to see and speak from a very different and humane, like you said, perspective. So I think what I like about the patchwork, it is a patchwork indeed. Like, it's poetry here. It's science going more technical. It's the essay, yeah, being more more formal and so on and so forth. So for me, I think it's a patchwork that allows you to see things from like different but very necessary perspectives.
Fabulous. I love it, love it, love it. Thank you so much, Marka. This has been such a good conversation. On a side note, I think we should meet up when you're next in Lusaka.
We will. Actually, I'll let you know.
And I want to read your PhD though. I mean, if it's available for you, or any articles that you've written, and I would be happy to share them on our platform as well. So, yeah, I think a lot of people would be interested to hear what you're saying. Yeah. Do you have any other final thoughts or?
No, I just think we've started the conversation. We need to keep the fire burning. And I'm happy that you're saying you would like us to continue this conversation beyond this podcast. So I think from here, just from here, I'll be sharing like a link to my PhD thesis and also like one or two articles, yeah, that just speak about this deconfining and just thinking, like just loosing ourselves from these strongholds of these fixed positions that we give ourselves, you know? It's like it's there. And then there's the reality. Yeah, so let's live the reality through the arts.
I love it. Well, thank you so much, Marka, for joining us. And I definitely look forward to that conversation and coffee when we meet here in Lusaka. And wait for that link as well. And we'll be happy to share it on our platforms. So thank you.
You're welcome. And thanks a lot, too.
We are at the end of our episode. I mean, that went by so quickly. You know, it's a cliche, but it's true. Time does fly when there's fun being had and interesting conversation. We've taken a glimpse into narratives of connection and dissonance, and we'll continue our exploration of diverse voices and perspectives from around the globe. Until then, keep listening, keep learning, and keep bridging worlds. The podcast was produced by the Women's History Museum of Zambia in cooperation with the Art Transparent Foundation from Poland as part of the international project Deconfining Arts, Culture and Politics in Europe and Africa, with the support of the Creative Europe Programme of the European Union and the Ministry of Culture and National Heritage of the Republic of Poland.